Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. We'll be remembering iconic journalist Gwen Ifill. Her career touched all the bases. She passed away a few days ago, and she's being mourned inside and outside of her profession, and certainly by our first guests who had a chance to work with Gwen Ifill side by side. Joining me in studio are Amanda Hunningford, a former intern at St. Louis Public Radio, who interned at PBS's Washington Week with Ifill, and is now with HEC-TV here in St. Louis. Anne-Marie Berger is a longtime producer with the Nine Network. She accompanied Ms. Ifill during her visit to Ferguson in August of 2014, just after Michael Brown's death. Ladies, thanks so much for being with us. Nice to have you.
Thank you for having us.
We're going to play a portion of an interview I did with Gwen Ifill in just a moment, but first I'd like to get your initial reaction. Amanda, I'll start with you. Initial reaction on hearing of Gwen's death.
I was extremely shocked and devastated. I knew she'd had brain surgery. I knew she'd been a little bit sick. I didn't know how bad it was. And I just started thinking of how warm she was, how brilliant she was, and all of the wonderful things that I learned up there, and started to cry.
The way you speak of her is the way I've heard everyone speak of her, certainly during the past week. Anne-Marie, how about you?
My sentiments echo what Amanda said. She was very impressive to be around. I was nervous the first time I had to work with her. I got to work with her, had the privilege to work with her. I had to pick her up from the airport, and I was so nervous. I kept checking my app. Has she landed? and she just wowed me immediately and made me feel smart, which is a pretty big deal.
You had more than one occasion to work with her then?
I did. I worked with her on an American graduate teacher town hall about 5 years ago. Uh-huh. That was the first time. And then when she came back for America After Ferguson 2 years ago.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll talk more about these things, but I'd like to give our audience an opportunity to hear some of the thoughts and the intelligence of Gwen Ifill. I had a chance to talk with her on this program in 2010. She was promoting her then new book, Breakthrough: Politics and Race in the Age of Obama. And I asked if she agreed with those at the time who felt that we were talking about a post-civil rights generation of black politics.
You know, there's a lot of debate about the terminology, whether we are post-racial or post-civil rights. I think the problem people have with that is the word post. It seems like we're past it already. I had Joseph Lowery, the esteemed former founder of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference in Atlanta, yell at me for using that term when I posed a question to him. And his point was, listen, this isn't about post anything. You have to go through something in order to get around it, not just try this, you know, say, oh, we've got a black president now, we're past it all. There is an evidence every single week. I tell someone writing about race, it's like the gift that keeps on giving. It never goes away. We never seem to resolve it. And it always seems to be this little flashpoint. You just have to be like Harry Reid and make a casual comment, a years old comment, it should be said, characterizing Barack Obama as light-skinned and acceptable and lacking a Negro dialect. And we have a week of fights about whether that was appropriate for him to say. Henry Louis Gates Jr., the Harvard professor, when he was arrested on his front steps, that sparked another week of recrimination and finger pointing, and ultimately a beer summit at the White House about race. What President Obama and a lot of these breakthrough candidates I interview for this book get is that it's almost always a losing debate to have a discussion about race in this way, because it's always about finger pointing and accusation and blame. What I picked up traveling the country this year, talking about this book and about these breakthrough candidates, is that one of the things they all share in common, and which a lot of Americans share in common, is they want to see if we can talk about this without being prepared to punch each other out all the time. The finger pointing, the yelling, the intended misunderstanding that we take when we talk about race. It seems like there's really some interest, whether it's because Barack Obama is there, I don't know what it is, but then we want to get past it, through it, have a more calm, not yelling at each other conversations, which take into account the degree to which race is an important factor in our lives, but not the defining factor.
I wonder how much future success by African-American politicians is tied to the success or failure of Barack Obama.
Well, you know, I remember when I was growing up, I always had the sense that if I did anything wrong, that if I were the first Black journalist to work at a newspaper and I failed, they would say, ah, well, those Black kids can't do it. And I felt that always, I was always conscious of the fact, in fact, was schooled in the fact that I had to be twice as good to be considered half as good. And I'm certain there are those out there who will look at Barack Obama and say, see, see, Black folks aren't up to it. I'm not sure that's where we are, though. I think people have so many concerns that really affect their lives that they will be gauging whether President Obama is a success based on whether they have jobs, based on whether they can pay for their mortgages on their homes, based on whether they are sending their children off to war, based on any number of issues which really do not have a lot to do with race. That means that there is some young person who's sitting, say, in South Carolina, wants to run for governor. I happen to know there is one. Mm-hmm. And he says to himself, do I run now because people are more likely to vote for me because they realize Barack Obama was not so scary? Well, to that degree, it depends on whether he succeeds or not. But the people making those decisions based only on race, I think that number is shrinking. I think there are a lot of people who might factor race into the conversation, but won't judge Barack Obama or anybody who follows based on whether he was the Black guy who pulled it out or not.
There are obviously many more African-American political leaders in the country today, but has the lot of the average African-American in this country changed as a result of that?
I don't know what the average African-American is anymore, and that's one of the victories. Yeah. A lot of people for years thought of African-Americans as being uniformly oppressed, repressed, poor, and underachieving. But now what we have done, because in part of the breakthrough legislation that we have seen, laws on the books, accommodations which have been offered, you have a different generation, a big, robust, hearty middle class, and folks who have opportunities for education that were denied them. It's not an accident folks are still catching up, because if for years, I mean, the neighborhood I live in Washington, D.C., for years actually had lines in it. You could pick up the deed of your home and see the covenant which forbade Black people or Jewish people from living in that neighborhood. And as a result, the neighborhood, years and decades after those laws were repealed, are still majority white. That was by design. So basically, everybody is improving. Everybody's lives are improving. Opportunities improve. And as that happens, the average white, Black, Latino American all benefit from that.
I guess the most striking thing we see today, of course, is the unemployment situation, which seems to have affected the Black community to a greater degree than any other group that I can think of.
No, it's true. And that's one of the complaints that a lot of the people we were talking about earlier have, which is this is a specific ill which disproportionately affects African Americans. And it is the fruit of years and years of being the last hired. If you're the last one in the door, you're going to be the first one out the door, no matter how you look at it. And that's what's happening a lot in this situation. It's also a question of access to education, which is why the president's frustration is he doesn't feel people pay enough attention to what he's doing to improve public schools, for instance. That's the underpinning for all success in business, for individual success. And so, yeah, there is a huge disproportionate problem. And the question is, how do you address it? Do you address it as a race-specific problem or a community-specific problem?
You know, one of the things I noticed, Gwen, see if you have too, is the fact that younger people today are integrating much more easily than their parents did in terms of the Black and white kids go out together and they interact together. Yeah, but it's different than their parents.
Well, part of it is the way we live. I mean, part of the reason why we didn't interact is because we didn't grow up around people who were different than us. We were in segregated communities, sometimes by choice. But the truth is, you didn't spend a lot of time around people who were different than you. Now, if you go into a city school where almost all the kids are Black, and then you see these kids go off to college, I'll bet they see color because that's not what they've ever been exposed to anymore. On the other hand, you talk to kids I know who grow up in integrated suburban environments, and you say to them, like I did to one young boy I know, when Barack Obama was elected, what do you think? He's Black. I said, what do you think about the first Black president? He said, it's okay. Can I go play now? And his friends are Asian and white. And he's just not carrying that around. So part of us has to be careful not to carry around our burdens and place them on our kids. But on the other hand, you know, we are in a better place. And that's what we strove to get to.
Hear, hear. Let's take a call from Derek in St. Louis. Talk to Gwen Ifill, please.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a question about the representation of minorities, but African Americans in particular, in the vast field of journalism. I was a member of something called the Minority Journalism Workshop when I was in high school, and we had professional journalists from all over the city give us tutelage in different areas of journalism. And I thought that was really powerful. I didn't choose to go into the field of journalism, but I'm very curious as to what do you think it takes to get more representation of people of color, particularly African Americans, in journalism, print, television, whatever?
Well, you've hit on an issue, Derek, which is very close to my heart, because I was involved in a minority journalism workshop for high school students like that here in Washington, D.C., and I probably know a couple of the people who Ken Cooper, George Curry, Gerald Boyd, who helped run that same program that you were involved in back in St. Louis back in the day. I feel that we have not come even close to far enough, and not only because it's important to have African-American voices in newsrooms, but because we need all kinds of diversity in our newsrooms. We need diversity of background, diversity of thought, diversity of idea and execution. And unless you have someone who's sitting in the story conferences making decisions about what is interesting to them based on a broader understanding of what their background is, you're not going to be representing your community. I was in a conversation, I think I can say this, yesterday in our morning meeting on the NewsHour, where we were talking about whether we would do a story about New Orleans surprising everybody by winning the playoff game. Well, nobody in that room was a football fan, so we didn't do this a football story. Well, that may have been the most interesting story for a lot of people last night. So without having someone representing that point of view, it's not just about race. It's about having people with different backgrounds. When I covered the Department of Housing and Urban Development when I was a newspaper reporter at the Washington Post, I probably was the only person covering that beat who had ever lived in public housing, so didn't automatically demonize public housing residents. That's the kind of diversity I think we need. I think that it's helpful if it's a diversity of skin color, but it's got to be diversity of understanding and background as well.
The late Gwen Ifill, who passed away just a few days ago at the age of 61, this was comments from her during an interview that we had in the year 2010. She was promoting her book at that time on race relations in the United States. And I'm joined in studio once again by Anne-Marie Berger and Amanda Huntingford, two people who got to know Gwen during an internship and also working side by side with her. And, you know, I think it points out, ladies, once again, how perceptive she was, even though that interview is almost 6 years old. There are a lot of things in it that are relevant today. How perceptive and intelligent she was, and that's certainly Anne-Marie. Not lost on you during your time with her.
No, I mean, she came in town here to do two town halls, and they were both very, they were focused on our local issues here, but being presented on a national level. But for her to understand the importance here for the St. Louis region around those was extremely important to her. And I didn't have to do much to get her to understand those. She came prepared. She came knowing what our area needed, what it was about, why our issues of education, race, how they were affected. And it made my job a lot easier. And I was a lot less nervous the first time I worked with her. But she really took her job seriously. She took the responsibility that was given to her to talk about these issues on a community level. She knew it was a big responsibility. And she just raised the bar for me, for my career, moving forward.
Well, that clearly is the way professionals do it. And Amanda, you had the opportunity to work with her and learn from her. Did you feel you were learning as you were interning for Gwen Ifill?
Absolutely, every day. She was just so brilliant, and she was so fast. They would start talking about what topics we probably wanted to cover and what journalists, but nothing would ever be set in stone until they ran it by her, because inevitably she'd be like, well, let's actually talk to this person about it, and it would be exactly right, exactly on point. She wrote her column every week. She wrote her scripts. And just when she was at the head of the table, you could tell that she was going to go places you wouldn't think to go, and she was so in charge of that conversation and knew everything.
What might you have learned during that time at Washington Week that you can apply to your new job and your new career, because you are essentially just getting started?
Mm-hmm. Well, there were, you know, general basic skills that made her such a brilliant journalist, but also one of the things that stood out to me was how warm she was and how much she knew everybody in that production facility, from the security guard to makeup to cameras. She knew everyone, and she put everyone at ease. She would always dance before while they were doing her audio checks. She'd have them pumping in music. And when I came back to visit one time, they weren't expecting me, but she walked by, remembered me, and the security guard looks at me and goes, well, if you're good enough for Gwen, sure, you can go back.
Yes. Well, it's an old rule of thumb. Don't make the makeup artist mad at you, and don't get the engineers angry at you, because they can do you in a hurry. Anne-Marie, I'm curious about the time you spent with her in Ferguson, and this was shortly after the Brown shooting, was it?
Yeah, it was about 5 or 6 weeks. It was in later September.
Things were still popping in the St. Louis area at that time.
They were. And just some context around what we were doing around America after Ferguson. This was a national PBS program. And Gwen was coming in town. There were going to be some national figures on the show, but the audience was filled with people from St. Louis, mostly from the Ferguson area. And it was important to her, before she got here, it was already arranged that I would drive her around Ferguson so she could see it firsthand, really get to have that idea of what the area was like, where things took place. And we spent about an hour, you know, Ferguson isn't that big, and we spent about an hour driving around to all the locations from, you know, the business district, where the farmers market is, to where the protests took place, to where Michael Brown was shot. And I feel very lucky because for what I do, I get to have these conversations with people that regular, my peers, regular white people don't get to have, right? So in my regular everyday job, I'm fortunate in that way. But then I get to have this conversation with Gwen Ifill while I'm driving her around in my car. And we talked a lot about race today, and what really was impressive to me or made a big imprint on me is her take on media. And, you know, she really stands behind the freedom of the press, but we talked a lot about how things were covered and the difference. What we were trying to do with America after Ferguson was dig deep into those conversations and where the wounds were and how we can get people to talk to each other. Not at each other, but with each other, and not making our job a part of the story. And it just reminded me that we've got a big power of what we do, and watching her do that and talk about it, it's incredible. I'm very fortunate.
It would be interesting to have that conversation with her today, given what's just gone on with the campaign and the criticism the media is being exposed to.
I just had that conversation with my mother of how her voice would be incredible right now. That's really where it really hurts that she's not here.
Amanda, you're nodding. Obviously, you agree with what Anne-Marie has been saying.
Yes, absolutely. The way that the things that she brought to Washington Week every week made politics make sense when it didn't. She had incredible insight to not only how things worked, but also maybe what we should expect and what questions we should be asking.
Do you think that she could be fair and objective? Sometimes African-American journalists are accused of being unfair or not objective in situations like the kinds of things we're talking about. Did you have any sense that anything like that was going on?
I think she was always incredibly fair, incredibly objective. I think she was a really, really impressive journalist and one of the best in the business.
Same question to you, Anne-Marie.
Not a chance. She was on target. She saw things from all angles and asked the best possible questions you could ask.
Mm-hmm.
She was well known. We're hearing a lot about it this week for her mentoring. It's hard to find anybody that has spent any time in Washington in particular that wasn't somehow affected by her. Do you have any sense of that, Emory?
Oh, no. I mean, people, you didn't have to, you know people, or know Gwen Ifill personally to have been affected by her. Everybody who watched her on the PBS NewsHour and Washington Week really felt that they lost a friend. If you had that opportunity, like Amanda and I did, to work with her, we're just extremely lucky. I mean, she worked with a lot of people. I was a blip on her radar, you know, but she left so much on me as a person and on my career. And, you know, I only worked with her two times, but it was I'm blessed. I'm very lucky.
Amanda, do you sense that during your time with, not only personally mentoring you, but did you see that? Were you aware of her ability to reach out to other people and help them along, kind of guide them along?
Yes, absolutely. There were a few other interns in the building when I was there, and she was very generous with her time and with her insights with all of us. Also, just kind of seeing how much Twitter exploded with how sad everyone was when she died. I mean, it covers Twitter when someone important dies, but not quite to that extent.
It sounded so personal. Everybody
right.
sounded very personal in their sorrow, whether they knew her or not.
I wonder, and maybe you guys know this, what her reaction to the social media was during the time that you were with her. Because she was old school. She started in print, and she worked for some of the best publications in the country. I wonder how she would have thought about that. Any sense of that, Amber?
Well, she used Twitter. She used social media. And
oh, you have to.
Yeah,
right?
You
sure.
have to, or you're not with, which is why I probably need to step up my game a little bit. But but she knew the value of it and also the power of it and using it as responsibly as you would any other journalistic, you know, medium that you're using, and to use it responsibly. And I did have that conversation with her about Ferguson and how media was using Twitter and how becoming too much of the story using that, and that bothered her.
Right. Yeah, Amanda,
but also using it to connect with people, connect with her viewers. You know, she was very good at joking on Twitter. She would talk about how much she loved Hamilton,
yeah.
about other things, and you know. She'd send out her guests. She sent out a video that we made that was the most prized tweet I've ever seen.
She retweeted me once. I'm just going to say that.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Oh, really? Well, that's kind of makes your day, doesn't
it? I'm just saying.
Uh-huh. Very quickly, just a final thought. We're going to have to wrap this up. And a final thought, very quickly.
She was amazing. She's one of my heroes before I got there, even more so afterwards, and she always will be.
I'm just very appreciative of her devotion and her work and the time that I got to spend with her, and she will be greatly, greatly missed, especially in the times coming.
We're happy for the time you guys spent with us. Thanks for helping us remember Gwen Ifill, Amanda Honigfort, and Anne-Marie Berger. Thank you so much.